Good morning. Bon dia. Usually when the guest speaker is introduced, the guest speaker is in the room so he knows what's being said about him. In this case, I was kept outside the room. So, did Dr. Mafata say nice things about me? Anyone? Well, I'm very happy to be here. Muito prazer em conservar-vos. I've always wanted to be in Portugal, so I'm really grateful to IPAM for inviting me here. I was also told yesterday that while a lot of organizations offer degrees in business, IPAM focuses only on marketing, which is very interesting. If you talk to companies, companies measure their success by profitability. And they say profitability is the financial performance of the company. I want to say to you, there is no such thing as financial performance of a company. There is what actually they call financial performance. It's actually a financial indicator of a company's marketing performance. Make no mistake about it. Okay, now how many of you are in marketing? Like, even if 40% of your responsibility is marketing, then you are a marketing person. So by show of hands, how many of you are marketing persons? It's being translated, so take your time. How many of you are a marketing person? So about half of you, it doesn't matter. You don't have to be a student, even if you are a senior executive. And if you're part of your responsibility is marketing, then you are a marketing person. So because I did not see very many hands, I want to ask you again, how many of you are a marketing person? Okay? And so you should really tell other people in the company that there is no such thing as financial performance of a company. There is financial indicator of the marketing performance of the company. So marketing is that important, and you should feel very proud about your profession. Today's topic is consumer trends and consumer experience in the new millennium, and that's what I'm going to talk about. I'd like to begin with a story. Imagine a countryside. Mountains in the back on the north side, river on the south side, and in between vast green land. The sun is rising from behind the mountains, and the breeze is cool and light, and the first rays of the sun are kissing the ground. And there 250 people are gathered alongside the Mazda Miatas. At the podium is Reverend James Macy, and he is reciting prayers. But the crowd is very impatient. And finally, it's a wedding ceremony, actually. I should have told you. A mass wedding, actually. And so while the reverend is saying prayers, the crowd is getting impatient. And finally, over the microphone, the voice of Reverend James Macy comes loud and clear. By the power vested in me, I declare you car and driver. This actually happened a few years ago in the Pocono Mountains in Pennsylvania in USA. Welcome to the world of consumer experience. Now, this is, of course, an intense, emotional, enduring consumer experience. But of course, consumption experience comes in many forms. Now here is another example of consumption experience. This is a company called iPadMyPhoto.com. So you send your picture, and they'll send you back this type of a picture. So here is another one, reasonably successful. This is not an intense emotional experience, but it is experience nonetheless. So experience comes in many, many forms. Whatever be the experience, underlying it is value in everything that consumers do in the marketplace. They seek value. Value, and not money, I want to suggest to you, is the currency of all human exchange and all human interaction, all human action. So if I get 20 emails on any particular day, I decide which one I should open based on my perception as to which one would I get more value from. If I meet you in the hallway, I'll decide whether I should be talking to you for 2 minutes or for 10 minutes based on my perception of how much value would I get. So value, I want to suggest, is the basic currency of human exchange. Good marketing simply means creating value for the consumer. And doing good marketing, creating, in order to create value for the consumer, requires that you understand. I think the PowerPoint will later be available on the internet without the images. So some of you I see making notes, you might just relax, enjoy, because the PowerPoint will be available. Okay, I'll make sure that it's available. So just sit back and relax and enjoy. Talking one-to-one, right? So good marketing entails understanding five concepts: value, exchange, resources, needs, wants. As I said before, consumers are in the marketplace. Why are they in the marketplace? For an exchange. An exchange is nothing but an interchange between two parties where each party receives some value. Resources are something that I value, you value, everybody values. And value, what is value? It's the sum total of all the benefits we get from a product or service that we buy. I want to suggest to you that we have five resources. All of us have five resources: money, time, physical energy, knowledge, and skills and social capital. Now you, ma'am, you are sitting there and you are saying, I'm very beautiful. You are. But you're saying, where does that fall in? That is in the physical energy. By physical energy, I mean physical beauty as well as energy. And you are saying, young man, that you got a lot of good brain. Where is that? That's in the knowledge and skill. So you tell me a resource that you have, and I will tell you that these five categories of resources cover all the resources you have. It is always these resources that we are trying to gain. Your life is nothing but trying to gain these resources. And we exchange these resources. So we give money to build some muscles, get more physical energy. Right? Old people who don't have much energy, they have fewer resources. Right? We sometimes give time to save money. So we take a flight that will take 4 hours instead of 1 hour, nonstop, by air. Why? Because we save money. Sometimes we give money to save time. So these five resources we exchange with one another and also with the products and services in the marketplace. What about value? How many values are there? How many values do we seek? Oh, about 1,000. Now, we can't do much with 1,000 values. We can't even keep it in our mind. Even you, sir, you very brainy here in the white T-shirt, right? Even you can't think of keep 1,000 values in your mind, right? So I give you a short list of four values. For us to be able to remember these by the acronym USER, okay? Consumer, user. Utilitarian, social, ego identity, and recreational hedonic. Here is a consumer. He has credit card. If you have credit card, you have a lot of money, right? Doesn't matter whether your bank balance or not, but your credit card, you have a lot of money. He obviously has time, a lot of physical energy. He has some knowledge, I guess he knows how to get some food. And he has some relation, some social capital. Otherwise, he wouldn't have the baby bear with him. Now, let me illustrate these four values. So this is an example of utilitarian value. So she's using the hairspray to keep the hair in place, and he's not. So the moment he touches the high static electric thing, his hair is all like me. Actually, I find that hair cool. I wish I had that kind of hair. So that would have been so cool. This is obviously an example of a company, Liberty Seguro. I believe they are one of the sponsors of this conference. Many thanks to them. They primarily offer utilitarian value. Here is another example, Renova. The primary value that consumers seek is the utilitarian value. This is an example of social value. So when we buy products, we become more popular, we are more accepted by our peers. This is ego identity value. I am the kind of person I am. I want to be this kind of person, not that kind of person. So each one of these has a separate, different, distinct, individual identity. And they are living that identity by getting from the marketplace the kind of products that they believe will give them the kind of identity that they want. Here is an example of recreation. Here is another one in the high-tech era. Here is another one. This is a caravan. And here both the players, those who are participating in the carnival, are deriving recreational and hedonic value, but also those who are watching it. Here is another picture. Sorry, I'm not supposed to show you this, so let's change this. I can show you just for 1 second. See? Okay, all right. Now, here are examples. Football is very popular here. So football obviously offers recreation as the primary value. But then, if you are a fan, you identify with one team or the other, right? And that's ego identity value. Now, this is the wine store, but if you think of the wine itself, then it's recreational, surely hedonic, because you get this sensory pleasure. But then you might also say, this wine is good, this wine is upper class, this wine is so-so, meso-menos, right? I'm this kind of person, not this kind of person. So it then can give you identity value as well. And its popularity or its prestige in the society of that particular brand of wine can also give you social value. Same thing here, Uniser, which is one of the companies affiliated with IPAM. Again, the primary value is recreational, but they could also give you social and ego identity value. Parfum, I even like the name. I believe it means sometimes, right? Am I right? Sometimes. Where is my friend? Barbara, does it mean sometimes? Parfum. Its primary value is ego identity. I mean, utilitarian, yes, for sure, but also ego identity, what kind of a brand it is. What kind of a person will it make me? Now, all of these products, the next point I want to make is that all of these products, the primary utility is utilitarian. Primary value is, of course, utilitarian, but on top of that, they also offer social ego identity and recreational value. This is the familiar Maslow's hierarchy that all of you are familiar with, particularly IPAM students. If you would please raise your hands. How many of you are familiar with Maslow's hierarchy? Okay. I think there is a lot of, very good, it's little delay. Okay. Now, there is some difference between Maslow's hierarchy and the way I have organized these values. So, yes, I draw inspiration from the Maslow's hierarchy, but it's different in that it's not like until some time you would always be concerned with your physiological need satisfaction, and then only you'll worry about the need for love and need for esteem. It's not like that. In most of the products that most of the consumers buy and seek, they're always looking for utilitarian value plus. They're always looking for social value or identity value or recreational value. Utilitarian value is just the price of admission. You can't get in if you don't offer utilitarian value, but that's just not enough. So utilitarian value is the foundation of the cake, and then the icing, and sometimes the icing is very thin. Sometimes icing may be the more fun rather than the base of the cake. Marketing then is basically connecting products to needs, wants, and values. So I got this picture, I put these together, the cool glasses, right? The glasses are cool. Barbara, they're cool, very good. Yeah, Barbara has been helping me since yesterday, so if nobody else responds to me like this, I just look at her and say, okay, I'm doing okay. Now, this raises some very troubling questions. When we say marketing, what is marketing? Marketing is connecting products, my products. I'm a marketer, I have a product. Connecting my product to consumer needs, wants, and values. This raises some very, very troubling questions. Does marketing create a need for products that consumers do not need? Does marketing create a want in consumers? And then the very fundamental question, what is the purpose of marketing? These questions are very basic to your understanding of your job, your responsibility. It doesn't matter whether you are a student just entering a marketing career, or you are a junior executive with 2-3 years experience, or you are a senior executive with 20 years experience. I want to say to you, you answer these questions in one way, and you will do marketing in the wrong way. You answer these questions in another way, and you will do marketing right. These are very basic questions. Who is this band Metal? He comes from USA, George Bush's lovely country. You love George Bush, I'm sure. I'm just kidding. And he talks about things like needs and more. I mean, does marketing create a need? I want to say these are very important and fundamental questions. Answer them, answer these questions for yourself. And if there is time, we'll answer them during question and answer. But I want to say, you answer these fundamental questions about marketing in one way, and your entire vision of what is the purpose of your life as a marketer will be different, will change. It's that important. I want to say, actually, that connecting my product to your needs, wants, and values that you seek is the old-fashioned selling-oriented view of marketing. I have a product here. That's your need here. Buy it. Buy my soap. My soap is the best soap. Buy my soap. You want to buy my soap? You should buy. It's good for you. You don't even bathe, it doesn't matter. Buy my soap. Not you, but like, that's old-fashioned selling, right? So I have my product. These are the values consumers is seeking based on the consumer's needs and wants. I have to connect my product to these values. Instead of that, the correct view of marketing is, this is the consumer with needs and wants, which results into consumer seeking value. I have to create my product to satisfy consumer needs and wants. That's the new modern view of marketing. So this is selling orientation, this is marketing orientation. So now it's very easy. What is value? Value is what happened here. And it should work. Value is created basically by crafting products that satisfy consumer needs and wants, not the other way around. In market leaders, what distinguishes a market leader from market followers? And marketers who do not do well, basically, market leaders are value pioneers. They create new value. In order to create new value, you have to do two things. One, you have to understand the consumer experience deeply. And second, you have to be at the frontier, at the front line, at the forefront of consumer trends. I don't have a picture for every point that I'm making. But I also don't have a point for every picture that I show you. I just like those pictures, and I said, okay, let's have it. So if you see some picture, you say, what's going on here? No big deal. Now, when we talk about understanding the consumer experience, we can talk about two separate kinds of experiences. One is the experience of everyday consumption, trivial products. The other one is the experience of what I call as experiential consumption, okay, which is a big word these days, but what is that experience? And we need to understand both of these. The first one, experience of everyday consumption. So this is children, the children's toothbrush. If you observe children, okay, you have to observe consumers in order to understand. Now, I don't know about you, but I hold my brush like this, right? Children hold it like this, which means that handle has to be big. So by observing consumers, you understood. It's a very tiny innovation, right? Not earth-shaking, not like going to the moon, but to the children, it's very important. It brings value. The other thing they notice is children take the toothbrush, and in 10 seconds, they are done. 10 seconds. That's not enough to clean your teeth, right? So they put music in the toothbrush. The music goes on for 60 seconds, right? As long as the music goes on, children are brushing their teeth. So this is an example of creating value by understanding the consumption experience in everyday trivial consumption. Okay, and each one of these offers everyday consumption opportunities, but if we understand that experience, maybe even in these products, we can do something so that we create value for the consumer. Now I come to the experience of experiential consumption. And there are 9 that I have selected. These 9 are described. I will not have time to go over all the 9 of them, but these 9 are described in my consumer behavior book. It's called My CB Book. Now, I want to say that My CB Book, I want to say that when I say My CB Book, I'm not saying mine, My CB Book. My CB Book is a nickname, okay? So when I say My CB Book, that's what I'm referring to. I'm not talking about me. All the time, okay? So please. So I won't have time to talk about all 9, but I shall talk about a few of them as examples. One of them is the product appropriation. What product appropriation means is that somehow I make the product my own. So how is it that I buy a car and there are like 100,000 other cars, like I buy a Lexus and the other 100,000, but somehow I do something to that car so that it becomes mine. I buy an iPad and I do something to it that it becomes mine. That's what appropriation means, and this making a product which is similar to 20,000, 100,000 others, somehow making it mine is important. May not happen for all products, but as a marketer, you have to see, can my brand be the one that consumers like to appropriate? And if they do that, then you are in very good shape. Consumers appropriate, when we buy a house, we redecorate it. So we do rituals, selection ritual, the manner in which we select it, exchange ritual, acquisition ritual, possession ritual, uses ritual. So we buy a house, and then we redecorate it. And we know who was the owner of the house, who lived here before. And if that guy was not cool, then we change a whole lot. If that guy was cool, then we say, okay, I'll just change a little because I want to establish my identity separate from that person's identity. Okay, that's an example of appropriating the house. Likewise, consumers appropriate the products they buy in important product categories, somehow make it their own. Consuming authenticity. What this simply means is the genuineness of an object, that an object is genuine. I'd like to tell you a short story. I don't know about here, but in America, these urban hip-hop kids, you know, hip-hop, the baggy pants, they would wear their pants so that it's down here, so that the underwear is showing, right? And I said, well, that's great. So I also loosened my belt, and I walk like this. And you're laughing, right? That's what they did. They said, hee-hee-hee. That's how they laughed at me. Can you believe that? Why? Why did they laugh like that? Why did they laugh like that? Why did they laugh like that? Anybody? Why did they laugh like that when I'm doing like this? Come on. What's that? I'm not genuine. What's the other word? I'm not authentic. Exactly. Right? So that's what authenticity means. Right? They say, I got the look, but not the touch. They say, you got the look, right? But not the touch. That's what authenticity means. Now, what happened then? There was a company. That company made jeans with the top of the jeans looking like underwear top. Did it sell? No. It would not. Zero. Nada. Why? Why? Because it's not? Because it's not? Authentic. That's what authenticity means. So consumers know what's authentic. You can't try to pretend what you are not. That's very important. Now there are two motives for, we have to understand what are the consumer motives for seeking authenticity. And the two motives, exploration and connection. And if there is time, we can talk more about these. Another experience is the body adornments. Tattoos, for example. Are tattoos popular here? How many of you have tattoos? Don't tell me where, just tell me. Just show of hands. Doesn't matter how young you are. Anybody else? Only two people in this whole audience? I see so many people who are so cool. I'm sure you have tattoos. Come on, be frank. Sir, be candid. I'll tell you about me if you tell me. As a marketer, I want to know what is the experience. I want to look into your mind and see if you have tattoos, what is the experience of having the tattoo? What is your motivation for having tattoo? It can be aesthetic beauty. It can be magic mystery. It can be affiliation. It can be alienation. I want to alienate you. In your face, you don't like it, I don't care. What do I care? Alienation, self-esteem, and identity construction. Now you might say, I'm not a tattoo marketer, why should I bother about this slide? Now that's another thing. Intelligent marketers say there must be some common foundation that I can look at this and apply it to my situation. So if you look at tattoo, it's nothing but public presentation of self, right? What other products are used for public presentation of self? Clothing, for sure. Hairdo. Lipstick, right? So then I want to study, I want to use the research done by scholars for tattoos and see, can I do similar research for my product and do some of these motives, some of these experiences apply to consumers using my product. So it doesn't, is not limited only to tattoos. Consumption of media fiction. The TV, I mean, people spend 3-4 hours watching TV every day. And they're watching the episodes. Like Desperate Housewives, is that common here? Yeah? Esposas de casa desesperadas. Yeah? Now you should see the chat rooms, the comments people write, okay? So if you're a desperate housewife, what you should do, right? How to enjoy life. And they're saying, no, this is wrong, this is not how it should be. What are they doing? They are negotiating meaning. When you begin to question that something that's shown doesn't make sense, you are negotiating meaning. And when you accept a meaning, then you are actually consuming your own beliefs. So anytime you felt like rewriting some story that you see on TV, any sitcom or any other show, you say, oh, that shouldn't happen like this, it should happen like that. That's an intensely personal experience through media. And in media, I'm trying to live my own belief system. Virtual identity. On the internet, you create your virtual identity. What internet does is it allows anonymity, it allows fake identity, it allows fantasy identity. I want to say there are three types of identities that we as consumers create. This is an example of virtual identity. Fake identity, its intent is to deceive. Fun identity, so recreation and connecting MySpace, for example, you write one paragraph, put your pictures. And then fantasy identity. It's harmless, it's playful, it's escapism, it's experiential. So I ban Mittal. I'm okay. I'm kind of cool, right? Meso, menus. In the real world, as a person. But in the virtual world, I'm very cool. So you can read about it in chapter 1 of my CB book. Okay, that's me in Second Life. I go by the name Bon Milano. Bon Milano, Ban Mittal, Ban Mittal, Bon Milano. See? Get it? Okay. Now we come to the second part. Second thing that good marketers have to do is to be at the frontier of the emerging trends. Okay? So now I want to talk about a few trends. Again, there are eight trends described in my CB book. And we won't have time to talk about all of them. So I'll talk about some of them. Revenge of the boomers. Boomers, in every country, the boomers are increasing. Okay? But their nature is changing, their psyche is changing. So there was a time when the only thing you could do for boomers is boomers were like, I've fallen and I can't get up, help! Help! Come on! Help! Help! No, I meant senora. But today, boomers are like hip-hop artists. The Bill Gates of the world becoming the hip-hop icons, Nike shoes, diesel jeans, and iPads. Shakespeare says, give me a what-what. That was my impression of hip-hop, right? So very energetic. Today's boomers are different from what they were in 1980s, even 1990s. So that's very important. Boomers are large market with money. They have a lot of money. And that's today. Tomorrow, they will, of course, become much older. But the psychographics is their self-image concern more than the previous cohort. So they are always self-absorbed. They're gauging their navel all the time, like this, self-absorbed. This creates market opportunity. Some of it is obviously age-necessitated consumption, but some of it is age-defying. They want to be younger than they are. Another trend is let power be to women. So I was told here, and same thing in almost every country, more than 50% of the students in colleges today are women. Okay, so you can only imagine 5 years from now, there will be more women and more power. Now, in some countries, of course, it had happened long ago, like in 1990. So in Kuwait, for example, and in many of those countries, women walk like 15 feet behind. Why is it so loud? It's echoing. Women walk 15 feet behind the men, right? Get it? So man is walking here and women would be walking there. Now, after the Kuwait war, a journalist visited Kuwait. Kuwait and Iraq war with senior George Bush's time. A journalist visited Kuwait and he saw something amazing. He saw that women are walking ahead now. So woman is walking further and man is behind. And I said, this is great. He said, this is great. How did this happen? So he's asking around, you know, that's what journalists do. How did this change happen? And so one person said, you know, there are the landmines, you know. see the landmines? The landmines, right? How much time more we have? You can say it loud. 10 minutes? This leads to more egalitarian gender roles, Mr. Mom phenomenon. So the father is now taking care of children. Increasing buying power. Women are definitely participating in consumption more. More get out of homes lifestyle consumption. So this is giving rise to look good industries and feel good industries. Cosmetics, fitness, professional clothing. Feel good. Because women, if they are making decisions, if they are in cooperation, they're also undergoing emotional stress, right? And so then there is need for industries that will make them feel good, celebrate, overcome the blues. Greater diversity. Everywhere you'll find more and more diversity. So the minorities are growing, and that's not true about Portugal. But what's true is the Eastern European consumers are coming in more and more, even in Portugal, I'm told. And this would then mean that there is a greater, so tradition is not going away, don't ever forget that, but the greater cosmopolitanism is coexisting with the enclaves, alongside the enclaves of tradition. I'll let you read this in your own time. The other thing that's happening is global consumer. And so the products and styles of distinct origins are now found everywhere. In the 70s and 80s, the cultural influence was going from Western countries to the Eastern countries. Since the 1990s, you'll see a lot of influence going from Eastern countries to Western countries also. The design of clothing designers, they're taking a lot of inspiration from the Asian countries. I mean, even Britney Spears, I don't love her any more than you do. Even she wears the sequin and the kind of designs that I can see are from India. I know they're from India. So more and more influence from Eastern countries to Western countries. Consumption of imported culture, both in original form and slightly adapted form. This creates marketing opportunity. First, you have to spot the trend, because whatever is going on in Asia, in 2 years, it will be in America. It will be in Portugal. So that's a very good way of spotting the trend. If you want to see what's coming to Portugal, go to Asia, go to China, go to India, go to Thailand, and you'll be 2 years ahead. And then you have to enable access to the immigrant culture to people who are coming from other countries, but also take these products and adapt them for the mainstream population. New forms of social relations. Because the extended families are declining and the long-held friendships are going away on the decline, you now have the mindset of urban, transient, very utilitarian, what's in it for me, why should I be talking to you, mentality. And that obviously then leaves a void for emotional satisfaction. And so now you have market-based institutions. We call them industry of social relations. So even when you go to the hairstylist, you're going there not just to get the hair cut, but you want to talk your stories. So the hairstylist is not just a style artist, but they are an emotional laborer. Emotional laborer. They're providing you emotional satisfaction. Another trend is suffused technology, suffused consumption. So technology is everywhere. If companies on the website cannot offer 360-degree view, then they do not have the advantage. Consumers will not buy from that company. Time-shifted individualized viewing, so TiVo is becoming very popular. Safety-centric automatic cars, the cars that will park themselves. Yesterday I was seeing that there is a BMW that will send an electric current to a bird that's about to drop the, you know, the bird poop on the car. If the bird is about to drop, it will send electric current, right? So that's, of course, that was April 1st joke, but I'm just giving you the kind of... Then your wired houses, wired homes, so the light will go away when you are not there. The refrigerator will send a message to the supermarket that I'm out of milk, and the supermarket will send you milk. So I'm not kidding. I mean, this technology is already there. Automatic replenishment of the products that you use often. Ubiquitous use of digital cash. Virtual shopping cart in a physical store. So why should I carry this cart? Why should I carry this cart? I just have a van. Oh, that's why it fell. I need to hold it in my... I just have a van and one milk, one toilet tissue, one perfume. Okay, and to the cashier here, send it to my home. Right, so this is what virtual card is. Okay, I just scan and give it to the cashier. I don't have to carry anything. Enhanced online shopping, and then finally embedded technology clothing. So this is actually a hug t-shirt. You wear it, and if you're wearing it, I could hug you right now. You can buy this shirt. It actually exists, and it can be programmed so no matter where you are, like you're thousands of miles away, and I can send you a hug. So more and more you would see technology embedded clothing. I'm going to go through this now quickly. Experiential consumption, you can read more about it. So people want electronic pets and companion robots. Who wants humans? Who wants real dogs? Electronic pets. Ownership-free consumption. I don't want to own the product. All I want is experience. So there are companies now that are offering for like 20,000 euros. You can have 20 days of use of Rolls Royce. You don't have to buy Rolls Royce or Bentley. You give me $20,000 and for 20 days in a year, anytime, it's like time sharing, you can own the product. So this ownership free use of the product is a very new idea. The experience, one of the tenets of experience consumption is create multi-sensory experience. So coffee, I just don't want to drink it. I want to see that it looks beautiful. Even in the advertisement, not just in reality. This brings me to consumption of luxury, consumption of icon, consumption of emotion, the sub-themes of the program. Here is an example of consumption of luxury. These are yin and yang sofas, yin and yang, designed by a designer. You recognize this consumption of icon? Now they say consumption of emotion. They say that there are 100 ways to leave your lover. But if you want to leave him on the Valentine's Day, this is the Valentine's gift that you send. Each one of these consumption basically must provide the value. So we come back to the value paradigm. Lanidor, one of the companies here. Now, if you look at iPod, probably it provides consumption of icon. Burberry provides luxury icon. Mini the car, provides emotion. Starbucks probably provides luxury and icon. These products now. So I'm not saying that. I'm saying it provides this. You have to ask the consumers, which of these consumptions it provides. Tiara, nice place. Each one of these consumption domains, I want to say again, have to provide a foundation of utilitarian value, and then on top, like the icing, it has to provide other values. In order to create value, we got to watch the trends. So one of the trends, for example, is the aspirational consumption. That leads to consumption of luxury, and now there is a trend called mastige, mass and prestige, products that are mass and prestige. If the ties are becoming weaker, the families are not together, friendships are superficial, then that would lead to consumption of emotion. People would seek consumption in the products rather than in people. So you have industry of social relations. Rising individualism will lead to consumption of icons. And so the people will always be looking for new icons, because the more individual you are, more you want to separate from other people. So not Nike anymore. Nike is not cool for some people anymore. So they go to Puma. Why? Because Nike is everywhere. Right? It doesn't give me individuation. So the more there is search for individuation, there will be opportunity for new icons. What marketing does well is that it can create new islands of value. Let's talk about luxury, one of the themes that Susanna will be talking about. Now, this is the concept of old luxury. You need a lot of money. But the new concept of luxury is honey. Why should it be only one type? First of all, it's more better quality honey this particular company is offering, okay? More pure, more organic. But then look just at the colors, the kind of variety that comes in, okay? So honey is not honey. Honey is not true anymore. Not all honeys are equal. A soap, can you believe, egg beater, right? I mean, in soap you can create value. So this is an example of new luxury where people are buying everything for the household in the middle level, and then I'll buy this one product which is slightly luxurious, right, to reward myself. That's the concept of new luxury. So basically what marketers are doing or can do is invent new islands of value. Here is another example. What happened to my pad? Oh, I dropped it here. You should have told me. It doesn't look good. They're doing the video, you know. Now, this obviously offers hedonic value, recreation, but that's not enough. I want to extend my brand. I want to enrich my brand, and I can do that by adding other values. So, see, even this creating this image means identity value. I'm that kind of person. This guy looks cool. He's into environment, cool, ecology, green hair. And of course, other people would like me. I'm the listener of this radio, sports radio. So basically, brand enrichment is what companies need to do. Every good company creates value. So if you take Media Fashion, another company that supports IPAM, basically, what Media Fashion is doing is it's bringing its aesthetic experience through design. That's Media Fashion's forte. And of course, it's also helping tangibilize the brand essence and personality, which in turn helps the consumer establish brand identity. Let me take one more example. Luxury, icon, emotion. This is Mercedes car. It obviously offers utilitarian value, social value, identity value, hedonic value. I don't know what they are doing here. I have no idea. See? I don't know why that's happening. Okay? Here is what Mercedes did. Let me show you this picture in big. See? So what Mercedes did is this. This is the only thing. This is Marilyn Monroe. Okay, Marilyn Monroe. Marilyn Monroe was the Soraya Chavez of 1950s. Right? Soraya Chavez, sir, is Marilyn Monroe of the 1990s. So what have I done? What I have done is added an emotional component. By having this advertisement, this brand communication also adds value. So people who felt emotionally connected to Marilyn Monroe would feel more emotionally connected to the brand, which already had all the other values. So let me summarize. Marketing is not what organizations do to consumers. Okay? It's not outsmarting or masterminding the consumer. But it's about casting your company, your product, your brand in consumer's image. The two views of marketing. One of the prevailing views is that marketing's purpose is to persuade the consumers. Okay? I have the power. I'm a great marketing person. I have the power to persuade you. Okay? That's wrong. My CB Books view is that consumers persuade themselves. You persuade yourself. You decide. They choose what associations, images, marketing communications they would accept. Let me give you an example. This is an advertisement from America for weight loss, diet program, fat, thin. They ran this ad in Middle Eastern countries. In Middle Eastern countries, they read from right to left. So they thought that by eating this diet product, you will become fat. But it was just as well, because in those countries, slightly plumpish woman is considered more attractive. So it worked well. What's happening is that consumers are not morons sitting like, yeah, do to me whatever you like. Okay, I'm a moron. I know nothing. No, consumers are actively processing and they persuade themselves. So never overestimate your power as a marketer. Now, in order to understand consumers, you need to understand consumers. How would you do that? Well, you can ask them. So interviews. You can observe them. And then, of course, you can interpret them. But I can tell you, one of my hobbies is watching people.